There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
To get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scoops. Corey Perry.
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani. Around in front. Score! Teemu Selanne with the steal.
Three in the fans score one.
All right. Welcome back to the Forever Mighty podcast. Big news. We actually just planned to record a show on Thursday, and it just so happened that the Ducks decided to hire their new general manager. Steven, you can't see this, but I've slapped a nice picture of Pat Verbeek over your video. Because I know you loved his glasses today. You made some.
I did. I was a big fan of them. I just, you know, it just surprised me. I don't know that I've ever seen glasses with what looks like one of those like Cabela tactical spaces in the center. Like, I don't know. I guess they're like black plastic rimmed aviators or something. I'm not sure. But yeah, it definitely made me chuckle. But it's okay because everybody made sure to quickly tell me to shut up. Which I think is a great sign that everybody is invested in our new general manager and they are willing to defend him, which I consider to be very encouraging.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've been behind the GM. And actually, like I guess we were all kind of behind Solomon, right? Because he took over from Murray, so there was at least some change there. So we're all like, okay, something new, something fresh. Didn't know how long that was going to last. Honestly, a bit surprised. Maybe not now, but I think when we talked about this for most of the year, this felt like a decision we thought was going to happen in the off season, and then all of a sudden, like every team here in the short term is like, okay, we're just going to hire a general manager now, which now that I look at it, it makes sense because if you're going to want, if Jeff Solomon's not your guy, then you want the new guy to come in, Pat Verbeek in this case, to handle the trade deadline and handle these important unrestricted free agents that are coming up in Lindholm, Raquel, and Manson. So it makes sense to do this in midseason now that we, you know, have it finally done and Verbeek's the guy. But yeah, always kind of felt like it was going to be an offseason thing and Solomon was going to get the job. So a little bit surprising in that sense, but we've kind of been building to this over the last couple of weeks.
God, Brett is already trying to piss everybody off.
That's usually how it goes. Yeah, Brett mentioning that Dallas Eakins is first move for Verbeek is going to extend Eakins. He did say he was going to have a long conversation with Eakins and get to know him better. So
that was the thing for me. Like, I think everything about the tone of what they were talking about, kind of post Murray resigning, they went out of their way to make it abundantly clear that they were not, they were not going to be rushing this process. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, like I at least felt that with Solomon having just come in, having come in from an organization that at least in their kind of rebuild process, like seemed to be doing a good job. You know, we've been very, you know, positive on how the Kings have kind of mostly handled their business. And then also having Martin Madden there, and I guess to whatever extent Dave Nonis, who is really just the third idiot brother.
So I was going to say, like, you've got this nice, like, dream team aspect. I'm getting a little ahead of myself there. But like Pat Verbeek, his history and his track record with Yzerman puts him kind of in high standing. There's a lot of teams interested in him. You got Mark Madden, who's kind of our scouting savant over the last couple of years. And then Jeff Solomon, really, you know, his background speaks for itself. And coming in from the Kings organization, you got these three guys who are going to stick around. Then you've just got Dave Nonis just hanging around, leaking everything to Darren Dreger, pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, but I think that was like, that was the big part of it for me. It was like, I felt like they were like comfortable waiting to see where this got them. And I think the way that the Ducks have been up and down this year and have kind of looked at different times, like two different teams, I think probably incentivized them to try to get this taken care of sooner than later. And, you know, I think the fact that it is going to be 6 weeks before the trade deadline, you know, it is positive for them. I think it gives him just enough time to kind of get in and get a lay of the land. But I think they wanted to make sure that they had somebody in charge for the next stretch of this season to make sure that there was a cohesive vision, because I think it could be very easy to kind of hot and cold, like you trade Manson, you trade Raquel, but you give Lindholm, you know, 8x8.
Yeah.
And like, you can justify that to me, but if the new guy comes in and goes, we're not there, then you just burned $8 million in cap space. If you want to trade him, he's probably got a no move clause at least. And if you want to trade him, you're probably A, not going to get back what you would have gotten. And because of the contract, you might even have to give things up moving forward to move the money off. Yep. So, you know, and to the same extent, you could do it the other way, right? Where they could send everybody out the door, and the team surges in and makes, you know, an impromptu run to like the Western Conference Finals or something. And everybody's like, oh no, they're like for real. Like, you know, and you're like, well, we just got rid of, you know, our last three, like three of our most important veterans at this point, like established players that have, you know, not only standing like on the team as far as skill level, but also in the locker room and things like that. And you're like, okay, well now we just sent everybody out the door. So now what are we going to do? And like, it makes me very optimistic, I guess, of how ownership will maybe be moving forward. And again, this is all just straight fucking conjecture. This could be completely wrong, and it could just be they weren't sure when they were going to get to meet Verbeek, and that's just the guy they liked. You know, I know in the press conference, Samueli was really effusive in his praise of him, but specifically like his link to Yzerman.
Yeah, and building those championship teams, right? Or one in Tampa Bay, and then his kind of progress so far with Detroit and what they're putting together there.
Yeah, it felt kind of like Sean McVay, or I guess more like Cliff Kingsbury, where it's like, oh, he knew Sean McVay, and everybody's seen Sean McVay's done such a great job, where it's like, oh, look at Yzerman. He's done this, and he look how good they are, and blah, blah, blah. Well, let's get his guys, because his guys all have, you know, the magic touch. And, you know, but I'm very optimistic right now with where this is going, and I feel more uncertain than ever of what's going to happen next.
Yeah, it's a really tough position to kind of get thrown into at the timing with Verbeek, but it also is for him an ideal situation to get your hands on this team right now, because you can really shape it to however you want to be by going through this deadline, looking at, you know, the three big core pieces that are unrestricted free agents. There's not a lot of contracts that you're tied to other than really Henrique, Silverberg, and Fowler, where, you know, you can't really move them out, or moving them out is going to be difficult. And then you've got the kids, right? So that you, and Getzlaff is on a 1 year deal, so it's not like you're tied to, you know, his big contract a couple of years ago. So it really is a clean slate. You can do whatever you want here. And he's got the freedom to go into this deadline and really look at this team objectively and make the decisions that he wants to make to shape this team. And, you know, again, you're only really stuck into three players, and Fowler has been exceptional this year, so that's not really a detriment. And Henrique's been good, and Silverberg has been good in his own right, so it's not like they're bad players to be stuck in. So you really, he's got the building blocks to kind of go out and shape this team the way he kind of wants to right off the bat. Like, how many GMs do we look at across the league where they'll get thrown into a just an awful situation where like the contracts on the book are just terrible. Like look at the GMs that have coming to Vancouver, and in that situation, they've continued to make it. Jim Benning continued to make it just awful. So whatever GM they get, though, that's going to have to take over that and look at those contracts and what they're going to have to try and do for that team. It's a less desirable situation to walk into. And then obviously you've got Zegras and Drysdale, and probably, if not the best, the second best prospect pool in the league. So if I'm sure if he had a choice, if Pat Verbeek had a choice of which team that had a GM vacancy to take over right now in terms of like roster projection and mm-hmm. looking at who could get to contender status sooner, I'm sure he would have picked the Ducks. I mean, a bit of a homer in saying that, but you look at their roster compared to a lot of the other teams that are looking for general managers right now, they are in mm-hmm. a pretty good spot.
Yeah, no, I think you're exactly right. I think, like you said, you know, there is a little bit of everything on this roster right now, which will give Verbeek an opportunity to really do whatever he wants. Like, he's kind of got all of the little bits and pieces, right? Like, he's going to come in with three very valuable expiring UFAs. He's coming into a team where we have seen Troy Terry, a young player, take a huge leap. We've seen what Zegras looks like he can be. There's, you know, I know Drysdale hasn't moved quite along as well as, you know, maybe some of us would have liked or had hoped, but he's still someone that, like, you can be very high on and be very excited about the way that he's going to develop and what he can be. So, you know, I think there's a lot of things. You've got Pastia, you've got McTavish, you've got Zellweger. Like, there's all these little young pieces. There's all these mid-level vets. You know, I think for me, you know, my questions will be, what does he do with Henrique? What does he do with Silverberg? How does he look at those contracts? You know, is there any one of the young players that he's maybe less keen on that he's going to be looking to move? Like, I think I mentioned this to you before on the show, but as far as, like, you know, is this worth looking at how much you can get for Isaac Lundestrom right now?
Yeah, like, it's possible.
You know what I mean?
Like, every avenue is open right now. There's a few players that are untouchable in terms of, you know, Zegras and Drysdale and all the younger players. But Isaac Lindstrom has been great, and there are a lot of good young centers coming up. And I don't think it's out of the question. Now, like, he's not at the top of that list, but if somebody comes calling and gives you an offer that you just can't refuse, or if it's, we talked about Chychrun and a few other players, if, you know, that's the piece that takes you over the line, then I could see that being a potential for him to get moved. And, you know, one thing that keeps crossing my mind, obviously the connection with Verbeek and Detroit and Yzerman, and we spoke about this a little bit in the last show, I think it was very briefly, but there was some rumors that Detroit might be moving on from a player like Filip Zadina. Well, there's a good connection there for Verbeek to pick up the phone and call his longtime buddy Steve Yzerman and say, hey, what's it going to take to get Zadina over here? And that's potentially where you could see maybe a player like Lindstrom or something like that go back the other way.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you say it. I hadn't necessarily thought about it in this way, but you mentioning it that way kind of made me think about it. Like, it'll be interesting to see if we have a situation with him where, you know, maybe he's really comfortable, especially with both of them being in the East, if he's really comfortable getting on the phone with Julien Brisebois, if he's really comfortable, obviously, getting on the phone with Yzerman. I imagine in the next couple of years, we'll see a few more guys from Detroit and Tampa look for new jobs, more prominent roles. Where do they go? What does that look like? You know what I mean? But it's really, you know, like, we had Murph, and Murph loved making trades with whatever team Brian Burke was in charge of. Like,
or
you
anybody
know,
that
it was
didn't
just
hate
like,
him from trying to deal with him before.
Yeah. Anybody in the East or Brian Burke were pretty much his favorites. You know, like, but I think, like, him and Stan Bowman, I think, like, had a really good relationship. Yeah. Like, we made a lot of trades with Chicago for a while. But you know, I'm curious. Like, I this is the, you know, because I was like thinking about it as far as like, what kind of questions are you asking, right? You know, and I think the big question for me that I've become curious about, and I would love your thoughts, is what would he have done with the third overall pick this year? If he had that McTavish pick, like, would he have taken McTavish? Would he have looked at Eklund? Would he have maybe reached for Edvinson? Like, I just, it's a very fascinating question. And I think we'll never know the answer, but I do think it kind of would provide an interesting glimpse into where he's at.
Yeah, I think we'll get that at this year's draft, and obviously not as high as a pick, likely, unless the Ducks win the lottery. But I would think just, I mean, we don't.
Can you win the lottery and the Stanley Cup in the same season?
No, I'm projecting that they miss the playoffs, but because technically points percentage wise, they're out of a playoff spot right now. I'm being very pessimistic, but. Like, I would think, just based off, I mean, who Verbeek was as a player, that doesn't mean that's the type of guys he's going to necessarily pick and gravitate towards. But you heard a little bit of that in the presser today, where he talked about how, you know, he just likes guys that compete, and they need to be bigger and stronger, and they need to get basically hit the weight room. And that's the next step for a lot of these guys. I feel like just looking at Mason McTavish's profile at the draft, that would have been a guy they still would have been high on. He has a background in pro scouting. I'm sure he would have leaned heavily on the scouting staff and Martin Madden. I still think, no matter what, that would have been the Ducks' pick, even with Verbeek as part of the staff. But yeah, I'm interested to see. I mean, like, this is all new for us, right? We've had Murray for the last, what, decade. And we kind of were used to how we approach a trade deadline and how Murray's going to approach a trade deadline. It's the same every year, and how he's going to approach the draft and what that's going to look like. And yeah, the draft has been a success, and Murray gets some credit there, and obviously so does Martin Madden and his team. But it will be very interesting, a lot of fun to go into this deadline and see what a new voice and a new direction is going to do with this team. And then you go into the draft and free agency, and everything's different in terms of an approach, and we'll start to kind of figure out fairly quickly here, and you know, what approach Verbeek has and what type of players he likes and what type of players he's targeting for the future of this team. And Brett brought up a good point earlier, and we talked about this on the last show, with the Ducks not playing a lot of games this month, and the games they do play are all against the Pacific Division teams fighting for playoff spots with them. LA, San Jose, Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary. Those are all the teams that they're going to face this month. Where they are now, third in the Pacific, could look a lot different at the end of February, which is perfect timing for Verbeek to really take a good look at this team. When Calgary and Edmonton and everybody's caught up, their game is played by the end of February. The Ducks have played them, you know, however those games have gone, you know, those 4-point games, and where they are going to be in the standings without those, you know, big gaps in games in hand. You can then take a real objective look at this team at the end of February, early March, right before the trade deadline, and say, okay, this is where we are. This is where we stand up with the other teams in this division. Which direction do we want to go? And clearly they're still looking at embracing the rebuild to some extent, but that will weigh heavily, I think, into the decisions and moving Raquel and moving Manson and moving Lindholm and how big these next games are for the Ducks. They're coming off a really good road trip where they went 3-0-2 against a lot of teams we didn't expect them to play well against or beat. And you look at Boston and Toronto, tough games, and Montreal and Ottawa and Detroit were easier matchups based on the standings, but tough buildings to go into on some nights and play well. And you look at that Ottawa game, John Gibson saved the game for them there. So, you know, you'll get a good look at what this team is, you know, where they are and what they're going to look like moving forward. And it's a great spot for Verbeek to be in and come into at this point to really get a quick objective look at this team.
Yeah. Like I want to ask you, like, and I, you know, don't say something funny, like, you know, like figure out where the coffee pot is, but like for real, like your first like day or whatever as like GM, right, of the Ducks, like what's the first thing that you do? Like, what is the first thing that you think is the thing that requires either your attention or just getting it out of the way?
Yeah. I mean, like it's fairly simple. I think it's, you know, he mentioned a bit in the press or two, it's talking with the coaching staff, talking with Martin Madden and Jeff Solomon, you know, talking with the players and getting a good look at this team and really starting just from there, from day one, you know, mapping out your plan and what you want to do moving forward based off that. It's going to take him a while to kind of get in there. And he's already said he's going to have those conversations with the free agents at some point. I imagine it happens fairly quickly, but, you know, probably a week or two down the road where he starts calling the agents and talking to other teams about Lindholm and Raquel and Manson. But a lot of preliminary stuff early on, just really trying to figure out, you know, who he has and who he wants to keep around and what his options are.
Yeah, because, like, I think for me, like, the answer is get everybody's list, yeah. Right? like call in the guy with the modifieds and all that shit and go
just right off.
No bullshit. I was thinking about this, right? Like, cause this is one of those things that like, I just sit and think about cause I'm an idiot, but I was just like, you just call all of them in at the exact same time. You make it incredibly clear. This is not personal. This is just, I need to know this shit. And you go, I need all of your guys's lists by X time. Right. You know, I am not committing to moving you. I'm not committing to not moving you. None of that. I just need to know what it is. And I think that's where you have to start, right? Because like for me, like if you can reasonably move Henrique, can you re-sign Raquel? Or does having Henrique mean I have that? I have a middle six winger, you know, player. Or middle six center, like a middle six forward on the team. So I can now move Raquel, maximize that return, and know that there's still going to be some stability on that roster with Henrique and Silverberg and probably Getzlaff, right? You know, moving forward and Fowler and stuff like that. So I just think it's, you know, it would be a very interesting way to kind of get an idea. And Dalton asked, like, I think usually most players do submit them before the season starts, but I also think
they get asked or if they need to, right?
Like it would also be one of those things to me where I also don't think I would expect a player to. I don't think I would expect a player's list to say the same.
Yeah, for sure. No, you never know how it's going to
unfold. I think Cam Fowler's is probably just four teams at the cap, right? He's like Montreal, Tampa Bay, Toronto, you know, just teams that can't afford him. And that's whatever. Like, I get that. That's fine. But like everybody else, right? Like maybe you're in a different spot, right? Maybe a team like Winnipeg to someone like Manson doesn't look bad. Maybe a team like Columbus to Henrique doesn't look bad. Like those are kind of terrible examples.
But yeah, they also kind of like direct teams that at the beginning of the season you thought were not going to be in a position where they are. And now, you know, like an Islanders could have been on somebody's list at the beginning of the year. They're probably not on somebody's list at this point. Nashville might not have been on somebody's list at the beginning of the year, but now they're a better team. They could be. I think Dalton's correct. I don't know for sure the details, but I believe they do submit them at the beginning of the season. But then I think when they're needed to ask for that list again, when it comes to a trade, like who, you know, submit your list and it has anything changed, I think that conversation happens. I'm not, you know, I'm 100% on those details, but I believe we've seen reports before where, you know, player's been asked, same as, you know, do you want to waive your no trade clause? Will you waive your no trade clause for this team? Can you submit a list again, like a fresh list of what teams you want to go to or what teams you don't want to go to, depending on what their no trade clause is and how many teams that they can put out there. So I think that will be something he probably does early on, I would imagine, just to get all that information on the table, right? And have everything, you don't have to go back later and do that. Just get it all done out of the way. You know, this guy can go here, this guy can go here. Okay, I can talk to this guy about this guy. And then I think that will coincide with the calls again to other GMs about the unrestricted free agents, about Lindholm, about Raquel, about Manson. Start judging what the value is going to be on these players. I'm sure that conversation, one of the first conversations he has before he does that is going to be with Jeff Solomon. What kind of calls have you received? What offers have been pitched? What is kind of the going price? You know, and a guy like Josh Manson, who's apparently been heavily pursued by Toronto as well as other guys, like, what have you gotten so far? You know, catch me up, get me up to speed, and then he can kind of take it and run with it there.
Yeah, and you know, something worth like saying too is like usually like a list thing is like it goes through the agents because that's why the agents are there. But I think if you do it this way, and I think if you do it off the bat, it helps kind of eliminate any room for assumptions or suspicions, right? Because if you wait 2 weeks and then you ask, well, what if someone's in a shooting slump? What if someone just got burned bad last game, right? Or what if someone's playing really well? Like, I just think, you know, it could create unnecessary tension in a way when getting it out of the way early is an easy way to just be like, this is just information that I now need to have as the guy in charge. I'm not doing anything with it necessarily. And this isn't, you know, a reflection of you. It's just you guys are the ones with lists. So that's what matters, you know, I think, you know, how much, like how high on the list right now is Dallas Eakins, right? Like, how quickly do you need to come to a decision? Because I think at this point, if nothing else, he has earned the right to finish out the year.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't imagine they're going to – that's got to be on the back burner for right now.
That would have to be, you know, like we would have to turn into Philadelphia in the second half and just have an 18-game losing streak. You know what I mean?
I would even say, like, right. You might as well just finish out the year. That's a decision. That will obviously weigh into the decision, but I feel like that's something that – you know, he's going to try he's going to establish a relationship with Dallas Eakins and kind of monitor that situation as they go and talk to the players and talk to everybody else about kind of what the perception is of Dallas Eakins in the organization. I'm sure he's obviously done his homework before the interview to kind of look into how Eakins has done this year and the coaching staff. And then, yeah, that's a decision probably, you know, even after the draft like it's at least getting through deadline and end of season before you even start, I think, revisiting that. And then you decide whether you want to make that call before the draft or after draft or, you know, after free agency and go from there. You know, it's kind of different for how every team approaches that, right? And whether they want to get a coach in before the draft. We've seen some teams do that. Whether they want to get the draft and free agency over with first and then just basically say, okay, you know, here's the keys to this team I built. Go and, you know, no insight or no input into how they want it built. So every GM's kind of different, and we'll start to get a good look at how Verbeek's going to approach that. But he's got a lot of big decisions, not even just with the coaching staff, right? Like analyzing his staff right now with Martin Madden, Jeff Solomon, and Dave Nonis, and what he's going to do with them. And I think I would imagine he'd want to make those decisions at the same time. Or you know, around the same time, and analyze, you know, all aspects of the team and what who he wants to go and who he wants to keep around and any potential candidates he wants to bring in.
Yeah, I agree. As you know, I think excuse me, I think you know, it's really interesting, right? Because there are already a handful of guys who are available coaching candidates. And again, I don't think there is any reason to make an in-season change. I just don't think that should even be on the radar, right? Like you said. But you know that there are names out there. And then you know that there are going to be a handful of names that are going to come in right in the end of the season as teams start letting people go. You know, and I think before the draft, you need to have an idea of at least who you're looking at if Eakins isn't your guy. And so, you know, I think that presents a really interesting situation, but I also think it's important, you know, to your point about free agency, like I don't expect that we're going to be significant players given what he's talking about as far as being in the middle of a rebuild and things like that. But if I'm a player, I want to know who my coach is before I sign. You know, so at the very least, he's got to get that done and wrapped up by July 1. You know, and the draft is always at the end of June, just before free agency. So, like, you know, I don't know that you can put off till after that making those kinds of decisions.
Yeah, you can't, right? Like, as much as I said, like, it has to go to the back burner, and it's not something you think about now, it will be right when you hit the offseason. You at least want to have a plan, right? Like, I'm sure he'll start thinking about whether he wants Dallas Eakins. I think the first decision he'll have to make is Dallas Eakins the guy? Not who are my other candidates and what can I do? Do I want to go at least another season, if not more, with this guy? If you're not sure on that, that's where you start looking at, okay, who's available? What are my top options? And now, okay, we're going to weigh the odds, have some interviews, and then make a decision based off that. And
we're gonna go get Claude Julien, baby.
Yeah, as long as he well, it would have been nice to get it. He was supposed to be the Olympics guy, the Olympics coach, and then he blew out his knee or something.
He fell on the ice and got hurt.
Yeah,
I thought he like in practice he like fell and got
hurt. I can't remember what he did, but he hurt himself and
so now, dude, is there like this is just all the way off the rails already, but like, is there a bigger downgrade possible from Claude Julien to Jeremy Colleton?
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, listen, like it's like, not like the team's going to struggle that much. You know, they're not a great team to begin with. The Olympics are, I'm going to watch the games for Mason McTavish Okay, Dalton said he cracked two ribs is what he did. Ooh. Yeah, it's just bad timing. Couldn't get on, you know, he just could not get on the plane and have to go through that when trying to coach a team in China. So, listen, it is a major drop-off to go
honestly, no bullshit. Like, how long do you think they sat there and thought, we should probably call Mike? Like, I don't know that I want to do this with Jeremy Colleton. Like,
what? Is Mike Babcock still coaching in like Saskatchewan or something?
Yeah, dude.
I love it, man.
He's doing it for the love of the game, would, not at all because he can just hide there until somebody forgets and hires him.
I would love to get one of the players of that team on for an interview just to find out how Babcock coaching that team is. Like, just an inside scoop on, like, is it brutal? Like, is he coach, he's got to be a little bit more lenient, right? Like, the skill gap between what he's used to coaching and these guys has to be, you know, obviously way different.
Well, that's the other thing. And, like, you know, again, for me as an American, it's easy to forget, but, like, because of the, like, infrastructure of Canadian minor hockey, right? Like the OHL and the CHL and all that shit. Like, if you're playing in college, you're not good.
Yeah. You know, a lot of these guys that play in college here, they played probably OHL or QMJHL or something for a bit. Mm-hmm. They were like third or fourth line guys there. They're older. They're, you know, 23, 24, and then they've gone on. They didn't make it, so now they've gone on to college to get a kind of a backup, and then eventually they might go and play pro, like, second league somewhere else. So, like, it's not like the U.S. where, like, the top guys go to, like, the top colleges, and you've got, like, really, really competitive players that, if they're not going to play in the NHL, like, they're going to be good AHL players or good players overseas. Like, yeah, it's a tough go. You're like the Cody Currens, right? Like, the highlights who come out of the Canadian college system.
Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. And so, like you were saying, like the idea of, like, you know, Mike Babcock basically coaching a U-22 beer league team, like, he can't handle that well. Like, I just
all or nothing Amazon documentary on Babcock coaching University of Saskatchewan.
You know what? I would sign up just for one streaming service just for that. Oh, yeah. Like, if they were just like, we're just gonna 24/7 Big Brother Mike Babcock, you know, Canadian college coach. Like, I want to see that because, like, I want to see the moment that somebody does something and it pisses him off and he physically goes through the stages of processing and realizing that he can't get – like, this was not someone who handled mistakes well when he had Nick fucking Lidstrom, right? Like, this is someone who's, one, been exposed as coach of the Red Wings, as coach of a very young Mighty Ducks team, go Ducks, and as the Canadian coach for whatever the fuck, like, he has seen the most incredible level of talent. And so for him to then be like, oh, I should rip into this 22-year-old kid for a turnover in the offensive zone. It's like, no, man, you can't do that. Like, that's just – that dude's just, you know, he's doing this and hoping he gets a break. But more likely than not, whatever class he's taking is more valuable to him long term.
Yeah. I would pay money to see that. We could probably talk about Mike Babcock all night, but I want to get back to Pat Verbeek. Your thoughts and overall thoughts on the Verbeek hiring. You know, as him being the guy, you know, are you happy with it? Because I know we talked a lot about internal hiring and Madden and Solomon were kind of at the top of our list for a while. And a lot of that's just because I'm not too familiar with a lot of these guys, like the candidates that come up, the AGMs and stuff. It's until their names get mentioned, you can go do a lot of digging. Like, you just don't hear a lot about AGMs until they come into the mix for interviews and whatnot. And you start looking at their resume and how long these guys have been around. We all know who Pat Verbeek is as a player, but what are your thoughts? How do you feel about it? Are you happy with it? Was there another guy you were kind of hoping for?
I think for me, the longer I kind of sat with just, like, you know, what are they going to do and stuff, the more I kind of, and I would say recently within the last 2 weeks probably, like really started to lean very strongly towards picking someone outside of it. And I felt to a degree that Solomon was a reasonable choice because he is so new and he does have a little bit of that familiarity, right, that you're kind of hoping Verbeek is going to pick up in the next 2-3 weeks. But he's still a mostly fresh perspective. So I think as far as an internal choice, he was kind of the one for me just because he was as close to an external internal hire. And I know that sounds stupid, but yeah. Like,
but he's freshly a new hire from another team as early as like this season, right? So
yeah, and so, you know, like I really like that they picked someone outside of the organization. You know, I think when you kind of look at like coaching lineage or like you look at his post-playing career in the way that you look at like different like coaches' careers, right? Like he went through the process. Like he was a scout and then he was, you know, on the team with Yzerman in Tampa Bay and moved up through the ranks in Tampa Bay. You know, like it's easy to forget Yzerman got there in 2010. He was there for a while and, you know, he worked his way up through, and then Yzerman dipped and was like, you're going to come back to Detroit with me and we're going to go make this happen. He was like, hell yeah. You know, so there's a lot there that is, in my opinion, encouraging as far as his, like his lineage, right. And what he kind of has been a part of historically. I think his comments about analytics are really smart. I think, he's the only player in the NHL history with 500 goals and 2,500 penalty minutes. Like, I'm sorry, but I'm still that dude. Like, that makes me happy. Like, the fact that a 5'9" dude has 500 plus goals and 2,900 penalty minutes, and like, you're not going to find someone to me
that well that in is, tune to both sides of the game.
Yeah, you know, and especially having, you know, again, made some of these comments about how he looks at analytics as a way to verify or disprove some of what he thinks he's seeing, right? You know, and you love that. But I just think from a human perspective, there is a lot to like about his disposition as a player, and then a little bit that we've seen of him, you know, in the press conference. Like he just seems all right, man. You're just like, okay, cool. Yeah. Like, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he develops. He's, you know, he's 57, so like it's weird with like coaches and executives, because it's like
they're old,
57
but
feels a little old, young, but like, for the it's position. Also not very old at the same time. Yeah. You know, like Lou Lamoriello was like 700 years old and he's still in charge.
Not everybody's a Chaker or a Dubas, so
right. You know, but he at 57, you could see him being here for 15 years. You know what I mean? Like, all right, yeah, that works. I'm cool with that. You know, I think there are a lot of positive things. I think, you know, people are reading a little too much into some of his comments about the rebuild as far as like where he is or isn't on it. Like, to me, he came in and said exactly what the team is, which is they're a young team with a lot of promising talent in the system and on the roster, and they're not quite where you might think they are, which we can see in the game by game play, the game by game results. You know, it felt more to me that he just made a pretty honest observation as opposed to making any type of declaration about what he was trying to do or wants to do.
Yeah, that was like the only I didn't have a problem with the piggybacking on like him recognizing they're in the middle of a rebuild and saying, okay, he's full on the rebuild and this is the way he's gonna go. Like it can hint towards that, but what else is he gonna come in here and say, right? Like, he's not gonna come in here and say, no, this is my plan, I've already thought about it, like this is what I'm gonna do. No, like you said, he just made an honest observation. This is a team in the middle of a rebuild. They got some good young pieces, they've got some unrestricted free agents that he's got to kind of handle that situation and figure out. You know, he didn't even tip his hand. He said, I'm going to talk to the agents. I'm going to talk to other teams, and we're going to see where we lean with these guys. So there's really no hand tipping there. He just said, I'm going to come in. I'm going to assess it. This is where I think the team is right now, and we'll see. And we won't get a full understanding of what direction he wants to take this team until we get through the trade deadline. And then we'll start to have a better idea, and we can start speculating and say, okay, like this is what he thinks this team can be and where they're going to go. And this is the approach he's going to take. Maybe if we get a few more interviews before then, I know Eric Stevens has an article that's coming out, I think tomorrow, that he alluded to, that I'm sure will be some sort of interview with Pat Verbeek. And maybe we'll get a look into it then, on what his plans are. But yeah, I think it's fairly early. Like, we had what, seven, eight minutes of talk from him, and a lot of it was just thanking the Samuelis for the opportunity and this, and you know, it was it's a lot of typical press conference stuff. So some good signs that he understands they're in a rebuild. Like, I know it's very easy for all of us to kind of see that, but there is some, you know, surface level understanding there that he knows where this team is at. But yeah, I'm gonna wait a little bit until we get a bit of a clearer picture on what his plan is for the team.
Yeah, it's like, just kind of sitting here and thinking about it, I think it is less of a commentary on him and the team moving forward and more of a commentary on where the fan base is at, right? Because, like, it should be noted, we are coming out of the, my name is Bob Berry and I'm not going to tell you a fucking thing. I'll maybe tell you after the fact that I did it. But other than that, you can go to hell, and every year we're competitive until I tell you otherwise. So, like, I get the way in which what Pat Verbeek said, which, again, we both agree is just an honest observation. I get why that feels so refreshing, and why it can be such an encouraging thing to Ducks fans. I would just say, try, like you said, try not to read too much into it as far as what it means he is or isn't looking to do, simply because we have no way of knowing. And an honest observation isn't really a nod or even a head fake in any one direction. Just, I want it to be, I would like to be, you know, he's like, I think it takes about 5 years and I would like it to be shorter than that if possible. Yeah, cool, man. That's fine. You know, like, if you look at that, you're like, yeah, like, 2010, that like 3-4 years, that's when they're picking up guys like Hedman and things like that. And you're like, okay, yeah, I get why that's what he's looking at. You know, and then they spent the second half of the 20 teens, you know, as one of the five best teams every year. Yeah. You know what I mean?
So, and like, it makes sense too. Like, the Ducks already have Zegras, Drysdale, McTavish, and then a lot of young complementary pieces coming up. So they are already, you know, 1 or 2 years ahead of that 5-year progress. So for him to say, oh yeah, like, I think I can do it in shorter, you're coming into a situation where they're probably 2 years already into the rebuild and they made some progress, and Zegras has jumped in to the NHL and now is a, you know, Calder Trophy favorite candidate. Drysdale's been one of the best young rookie defensemen. McTavish is possibly the top prospect outside the NHL right now. He's up there. So there are some building blocks you already can step into and say, okay, like, we are a little bit further down than where they started with Tampa Bay, and where they even started with Detroit when they both got there too.
I'm not even trying to fuck with you right now. I'm actually very curious about that comment. Like, are we 100% sure he's even the best prospect in his draft year? Like, you know, not in the NHL. Like, I think there is a lot of reason to be excited about William Eklund. And I don't think you can ignore the relative consensus around Owen Power, yeah, that he was simultaneously one of the best upside picks and one of the best base level picks, right? Like, the base version of him is probably still a top four defenseman, and it's just about, is he a legitimate number one guy, yeah, right? But everything else is already there. So, like, I'm just curious, because, like, it's just, you know, I try to think about that kind of, like, context and stuff and, like, other players. And, like, yeah, technically now Byfield is in the league, you know, and obviously you've got Stützle and Lafreniere and all that. And it's just kind of like, all right, I'm just, you know, curious about kind of where they fit in. But yeah, McTavish is on a hell of a run right now. He's on the Canadian Olympic team, which isn't nothing. Again, Owen Power's on that team too. You know, but there's a lot to be excited for Pat Verbeek. And like I said at the very beginning, like, I think the thing that's kind of funny to me is I haven't been this kind of positive just about where I thought this team might go at the same time as having absolutely no fucking idea what's going to happen. Yeah. He can do anything. He has absolutely no ties to any of these people. And I think that is going to be a benefit, but it does make him, to whatever degree, unpredictable.
It's exciting. You know? It's exciting. At the very least, it's exciting to head into a deadline in a draft and free agency and tough decisions and trades with unpredictability, right? Like, we don't know what's going to happen. There's no track record. There's no history to look at to say this is what he normally does, where we go into every deadline and every free agency and say, okay, Bob Murray's going to make a couple hockey deals and maybe he moves that one kind of small core piece I'm onto, or Akash or Richie. And we go into free agency, we sign some depth guys to fill the bottom six. And that's it, right? And maybe we make a big splash, and our big splash is Kevin Shattenkirk, right? Like, it's different to go into it. And nothing might happen. Like, there's a good chance we go into free agency, and we do the same thing. And who knows what we do at the draft and at the deadline. But it's just not knowing, which is, you know, it's nerve-wracking to some extent, but it's exciting at the same time to have that different perspective. But to finish off that McTavish thing, yeah, I think there are definitely a lot of players like Power and Eklund and others who are kind of vying and probably arguably further ahead or closer to that number one spot. But McTavish is definitely in that discussion as mm-hmm. you know,
absolutely
one of the top five prospects outside the NHL at this point. Let's still pivot to Verbeek, but talk about some of the other guys who were in the discussion. So obviously Solomon and Madden were interviewed. It looks like the finalists, I don't know if this was the finalists in general or just the finalists of outside candidates, but Jason Botterill was the other finalist, I guess AGM in Seattle now. And Ryan Martin, AGM with the Rangers, was also seriously considered for the position. So like number three, I guess. And we heard Ryan Martin's name before Verbeek got announced. We heard Verbeek. Didn't hear Botterill until today. That was new. And then obviously Solomon, Madden, and Nonis were the ones we kind of expected.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see the other names that kind of leak out, you know, because we did hear at one point the external list on its own, just the initial list was like 12 people at least, you know, so I think it'd be very telling to see kind of what the, I don't know, hiring committee or whatever you want to call them, the brain trust, you know, of those three guys. Cause the other thing I thought was interesting is the degree to which Teemu Selanne kind of became more notable in the conversation as it kind of closed up, which I think probably speaks to one, the fact that Teemu has always just kind of wanted to be Teemu, you know, like he, you know, even in the '90s, like he was doing rally racing in Finland in the off season and the NHL was like,
part of the squad. He's part of the decision-making process. I don't think he was officially announced when they first said it was like, it was Niedermayer, Korea.
Right. No, he wasn't.
And we were like, oh, we all talked about it. Like, okay, why is Teemu not here? But it's Teemu. Like, he probably said, you know, if I can be there, I'll be there. But I don't know. Exactly. I don't know if it's going to work out. And then it just turned out that he was more part of it than people thought he would be. So now he's getting mentioned for being a part of it.
Yeah, it feels like Tamu's kind of like Duck's just like fun uncle. Yeah. Like, he shows up 40 minutes late, but it's fine because he makes everybody happy. Yeah. And you're like, okay, cool. You know, but they're already getting into this, and I am very curious about this. I was very surprised, and I mentioned this to you before the show, like about how negative the reaction to Jason Botterill was from, or I guess how positive everybody was that he didn't get it. And I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that because I was a little surprised by that.
Yeah, I was initially negative, and it was more ignorance on my part. I still think we dodged a bullet because I'm not a huge fan of Botterill's time and with the Sabres. I know it was a tough job to step into. For some reason, I thought he was the guy that handled the Eichel trade and completely forgot about Kevin Adams being the guy that did that and put that together. So I've toned down a little bit on my hate for it, but I still think when we weigh up the candidates and their, you know, their track record and their history and their development in this league as executives, I think the difference between Verbeek and Botterill, we dodged a bit of a bullet there. But there's obviously something that guys smarter than me, that the selection staff and that they saw in Jason Botterill and through his interview, that made him a finalist. So there is some credit there you would want to give the selection committee that right. They had him there for a reason. But we see guys like Peter Chiarelli getting potentially the job in Chicago. So Jesus. I don't know how much credit I give to former players when you've got, I think it's Pat Sharp and somebody else that are leading that committee and thinking that Peter Chiarelli might be the guy there. So I don't know. I think I was a little bit too harsh on Botterill. And you know, a lot of that again is he was a GM of a really shitty team. It's a really tough job to do. They didn't, you know, there wasn't mm-hmm. much he could do to turn that team around fairly quickly. And then all of a sudden he gets like thrust into the Eichel situation. Eichel gets hurt and then he wants to trade. And then ends up being Kevin Adams who makes the trade in the end, but Botterill still kind of linked to that situation in the dark days in Buffalo. So it's going to be hard for him to shake that, just as it was hard for Dallas Eakins to shake the shitty start mm-hmm. he had as a coach with the Edmonton Oilers and the crap team that he had there. And he's done a good job of kind of shedding that this year, and not many people talk about it as much as they did, but it's something that, you know, any GM who's been in a situation like that, it's going to follow them for a while, right? Like, it's a tough until you mm-hmm. prove yourself in another situation, and if he ever gets that, then, you know, you're always going to remember it as the guy who just was GM of a shitty team and didn't make it any better.
Yeah, exactly like you were saying. Like, I remember when Eakins got the job, like every fucking interview that he did had, so what did you learn about your time in Edmonton? How do you feel? Like, oh, would you take away the donuts and make everyone eat carrots again? And he was just like, no, like I came in a little strong and I, you know, blah, blah, blah. And like, he had to do that, you know, just being announced as the guy on the job. And then it took him 2 years of, like, basically all of the progress that he had kind of made in rebuilding his image or reputation in San Diego almost got completely wiped away by two very bad years in Anaheim. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing now that wasn't all to do with him. And I am very happy that he seems to be a better coach than it appeared like he may have been early on. But yeah, like, you know, with Jason Botterill, like, and I looked it up and, like, you know, I was like, why is everybody so negative? Well, he's traded for Jeff Skinner and then gave him that contract. Yeah. So yeah, fair enough. That's, you know what? Yeah, that's totally cool.
In hindsight, it's worse though, because I think when that signing was made, it was coming off of a 40 goal year for Jeff Skinner, right? Where everybody was like, okay, like this kind of makes sense. You know, there's a good chance he probably doesn't repeat. I think there was some numbers kind of back it up that like that was just a ridiculous season for him. So, you know, you can kind of chalk it up to that. But like, he came off an unbelievable season. So, you know, it's one of those deals you go back and you say, okay, in hindsight, like that sucked. And I know Skinner's been playing a little bit better lately, but it's one at the point where they were trying to keep Eichel around, trying to keep him happy. Like, it was a deal you kind of had to make. Like, they needed wingers, and this guy was unbelievable for them playing with Eichel. Like, you just had to keep him around. You had to do that.
And that's I think, the part of it. Like, again, like, I do think there's plenty of legitimate criticism to be had for the way that he handled certain things while he was there. But at the same time, like, I do think we can look, and like, at a certain point, you do have to look at the fact that like, nobody's had any real success in Buffalo. Like, he came into a situation, which again, I think most GMs would give their right arm for, but he came into a team that was on a time that was on a clock right away. You walk in, you have Jack Eichel. Let's go. This is what we're doing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we're making this happen now. So he kind of doesn't necessarily have the freedom that, say, Pat Verbeek does now to feel the process out a little bit more. And I think that needs to be taken into account. I think that at this point, it's pretty clear that the owners in Buffalo, the Pegulas, suck ass and are not fun people to work for. You know, so I hope that, you know, because Jason Botterill was a huge name. I think he worked, he was at Pittsburgh for a long time. You know, he's a guy who, like, he got his shot and it went very poorly. And now he's in Seattle. And it's like, well, the Seattle roster's not great. So how is that helping him out? But at, like, the same time, you're like, Ron Francis is pretty clearly in charge. And it's also fair to point out that Dave Haxtell is the coach. You know what I mean? And, like, he's notably bad. So I just think it's interesting as far as that's concerned. It creates, like I said, I was just kind of surprised how negative. I think it's very easy to look at it and go, Pat Verbeek is clearly the better candidate. But like I said, the kind of emotion behind some of the holy shit, thank God it wasn't Jason Botterill, kind of caught me off.
Can you imagine if he had gotten hired?
This would have been
a completely different podcast if Jason Botterill was hired. I'm sure the chat would be a little bit less friendly tonight if that was the case.
Yeah, no kidding.
The only other thing on the Verbeek stuff before we move on to probably a quick trade deadline talk and then a bit of a talk about how the Ducks have played lately is what's next for Jeff Solomon and Martin Madden. Obviously, from what we've heard, they're going to finish the season as AGMs for this team. And for a foreseeable future, I would assume they would stay as AGMs because that is kind of the logical stepping stone for them to eventually get into a general manager role. But Martin Madden, he's been requested for interviews for some teams. The Ducks have denied it in some cases with Montreal. I would imagine like they're going to stick around for a little bit here until Verbeek decides what he wants to do with his staff. But if Martin Madden and maybe even Jeff Solomon are definitely going to get calls and interviews when other teams are looking for general managers.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I was laughing. Was just thinking about that quote from earlier where it was Martin Madden, Jeff Solomon, and Dave Notis are all more than happy to continue on in their roles that they're current. And I'm like, yeah, we can just all agree. Dave Notis isn't getting another
Dave
job.
Dave Notis is fairly happy to keep doing whatever he's doing right now.
No kidding, dude. Like, hey, Dave, we need you to go park cars. Cool. Thanks, man. Don't worry about it. I got it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just so funny that, like, he just, like, again, his name is just in. And again, I get it. He has the title. He is an assistant GM. He has been a GM in this league, which I think is all of the reason why his name shouldn't be around, but I get it. You know, so it is what it is as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, I think it's really interesting. I think if you're Martin Madden, you have a legitimate case to be a little frustrated because you probably would have had a good shot at least making the final group in Montreal. Yeah.
And I wonder how much of that even is the organization and maybe even his decision too. Like, we don't know if they just blocked him or maybe that was also kind of his choice. Who knows, right?
That's fair. You know what I mean? He could have just been like, I'd rather just see this through. And, you know, when we get to the summer, whether I get the job or not,
he's been here for so long too. Like, obviously the end goal for all these guys is to be a general manager, but sometimes seeing, like you said, seeing this through could mean more to him at this point than okay, I'm going to Montreal, like that shit show, and I'm going to be the GM there. Or I could kind of stick it out here, potentially have a shot at the general manager job, which he was interviewed for. Mm-hmm. And maybe that changes now that he didn't get it, that he starts looking a little bit more seriously at some of these other positions. But there is something to be said about wanting to stick around and see it through. And he's built this team, right? Like, in, you know, the scouting department and, you know, being the head of amateur scouting, like this is his team as much as it is now Verbeek's and Jeff Solomon's to some extent, Bob Murray's, like he has his fingers all over this team in terms of how they've been built.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, I have a ton of respect for what he's done in the organization. I just think it's natural to expect someone who has been as solid for as long as he has to look for another opportunity to maybe do something a little bit more. And so, like, yeah, I get that. You know what I mean? And so I'm – it would not surprise me if he was not with the Ducks at the start of next season. I fully expect Solomon to stay because I kind of think Verbeek will make him his right-hand man. Because I think it'll be very easy for him, for Verbeek to be like, all right, so like I'll work with Madden, or even if Madden leaves, whatever, like I can do the scouting part. But like I don't have an analytics background. I just know that it has, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I don't want to make it out like he's an idiot. That's not really fair. But like, you know what I'm saying, right? Like he's not that guy. So I think having a guy like Solomon who already started trying to build an analytics department here before Murray was even let go or resigned or whatever. I think Solomon will probably be the AGM here for a good chunk of time.
It's a nice duo to have. And obviously, it's even nicer if you have Martin Madden a part of that and you've got those three guys working. Like again, we haven't seen anything from Verbeek. We're just giving the benefit of the doubt because of his track record. But to have that those three guys kind of leading the way and running this team, it is exciting, right? Like you've got kind of all aspects of you know, analyzing and players and, you know, bringing in players and kind of different approaches to the game, where Verbeek's kind of right in the middle and Solomon's very analytically inclined when it comes to analyzing players. And like you said, building the analytics department with the LA Kings and Martin Madden, again, in the past, he's been kind of in the same boat as Verbeek, but I know I remember a few of his interviews in the past where he said he's kind of likes to go out and watch the players and that's kind of his final judgment type guy, which makes sense. I mean, mm-hmm. being a scout for as long as he was, that I'm not surprised that he's approached. So you do kind of get like all aspects of the game and the way to kind of view and approach and analyze players from all three of them. So it would be nice to keep them around, but eventually it's an embarrassment of riches. Like one of these guys, especially if the team continues to do well, they're going to continue mm-hmm. to attract interest. And at some point, the right opportunity is going to come up for one of them where it's just too good to pass up on.
God, it's going to be so unfortunate when Rob Blake gets fired, but I can't wait for them to hire Dave Notis. They're going to be so
happy. Dave Notis, I know, Mark Bergeron as the GM and Dave Notis. Notis, there we AGM. Go. Say goodbye.
Or Mark Bergeron is a head of executive. Yeah.
Bye, Luke.
Vice President.
Bye, Luke. Bye, Rob Blake. It's now Bergeron and Notis running the show in L.A. First thing they do is trade Byfield for, like, P.K. Subban.
Jesus. No, you don't want to bring in PK Subban. He's bad for the locker room. You got to go out and get somebody else. I think he would trade for Nathan Horton's corpse before he traded for PK Subban.
Oh, all right. I was going to say, let's go into a little trade deadline talk. I'm not sure if that's going to take us too long. I know we've talked about it a little bit, obviously, with Raquel and Lindholm and Manson. I think maybe we save this for another one because we've kind of talked about it a bit. The only thing I was going to bring up is the Leafs have apparently been taking a hard look at Josh Manson, which isn't surprising. This happens almost every year for the last 3 to 4 years that the Leafs have been interested in him.
Well, what was the joke I think Friedman in 32 Thoughts had, which was like Toronto's been interested in Josh Manson since Pat Imlich was in charge.
It's been a while.
It's
more possible now with no Bob Murray, because Bob Murray just loved the guy for obvious reasons, but it's potentially possible.
Make me sad. Yeah. You know, I said it today, like I would expect all three of them are gone. I think that is the most likely outcome. You know, they're all 28, 29. They're all about to get a good contract. And it's very easy to see how they aren't on Anaheim's timeline. You know, again, like I would love to keep Lindholm around. I think he's special. I think, you know, he plays a game that they very much need and nobody else really does. But I also understand that, like, he's 28 years old. Yeah. He probably wants to win and he probably wants to get paid. You know,
he definitely wants to get paid, like, when he's looking at what guys like Darnell Nurse and Heiskanen got.
Right. Well, dude, think about this. Him and Trouba are in the same draft class, and Trouba got that stupid deal from the Rangers. He's like, no, I'm definitely better than Jacob Trouba. Like, what are we talking about?
Lindholm's looking at this and probably saying he's going to at least get seven and a half, if not push.
Oh, dude, he's got dollar signs in his eyes.
I don't blame the kid either.
I don't think he'll get to 9. I think he's got a good chance at being between like 7.5 and 8.3, somewhere in there. But, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, every year the Toronto, like, I also kind of wonder how much of it is just Josh Manson is so easily identifiable as a part of this team that a lot of people feel they've been missing. He has a presence, he has a type of game, and he's a right-handed shot for a team that has, however you feel about whether this is part of it, has had trouble, obviously, making it out of the first round. Like, they just haven't done it. You know what I mean? And you got to look and you'd be like, all right, like, you know, what is the toughness factor with this team and stuff like that, right? And, it's, you know, they keep Wayne Simmonds around. Like, Jason Spezza is the hitman on that team. Like, that's – you can't have that. You know, he's just a nice – whatever. But, like, yeah, so it makes a lot of sense. I expect, you know, after the All-Star game or maybe during the All-Star game this weekend, we'll start to get more information because people will all be kind of in the same place. There will probably be a lot of executives and a lot of media, obviously, at the All-Star game. It's in Vegas. They're going to play blackjack together. They're going to play poker. They're going to go drinking, and they're going to start talking. And so I think next week we probably will have a few more juicy rumors to talk about as far as what teams are looking for and what Anaheim is looking to get.
Yeah. Anaheim's in a good spot. We've mentioned this on several podcasts, but being maybe not having the number one guys available when you look at Chychrun and Klingberg, but Lindholm and Manson could be the number two guys after those, right? Where Lindholm is out, Lindholm could arguably be better than Chychrun. I think the age and the contract for Chychrun and what the season he had last year offensively just kind of put him in another level above Lindholm. But once Chychrun goes, all those teams who miss out on Chychrun are going to be calling the Ducks for Lindholm. And once Klingberg goes, and I know Manson, again, a completely different game than Klingberg, but as a right shot defenseman, once he goes, teams are going to be calling the Ducks even more on Josh Manson, every team that misses out on John Klingberg. So there's going to be a lot of interest there. And obviously Raquel with his contract and pedigree and production, there's going to be interest. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of how these deals are approached, what teams end up coming in for them, and ultimately what the Ducks end up getting for these guys is going to be exciting to see. Hopefully it's not bad. You know, I don't want to come out of the deadline and us be talking about the Ducks not getting enough for these guys, but it's at least exciting to go into it and have some thought that this team could look a lot different when we come out the other end.
Yeah, 100%. It's very easy to look at them and be like, they're desirable. Like, again, David Savard got a first-round pick last year. Like, I'm sorry. Josh Manson is better than David Savard. Like, I don't think there's any question about that at this point.
Ben Chiarot might get a first-round pick in Montreal, which is...
Yeah, exactly. And just, what are we doing? That's,
hopefully,
if
it's a seller's market, then, yeah. Let's get him out the door now.
But, yeah, like, exactly like you said. You know, and him and Lindholm probably are a little bit closer in style as far as being, you know, big bodied, more defensive minded guys than Chychrun. But to the same point, like you said, when you're looking at Klingberg and Manson, you're like, yeah, there's only so many right handed defensemen. Apparently they've kind of become, you know, the Beanie Baby or the Tickle Me Elmo of the NHL, where it's just like, oh, we got to have one. We got to have as many as we can. And there, you can never have too much, you know. So I very much expect Anaheim to come out of the trade deadline with a fair number of pretty pennies. And I'm excited about it, you know. And I expect that there will be someone traded who we don't see coming. And I'm fascinated by who that's going to be.
Well, I know know we're planning on being live for deadline days. Hopefully it's not the same as the last couple deadline days we've had where everything happens the days leading up to it and nothing happens on deadline day. But that's usually how it goes. So we're going to try and be live for that one. And so it'll be a bit more exciting this time around with not expecting a small hockey deal to come through and some AHL signings or trades at the end of the day where we're used to from Bob Murray. So that will be a fun one. Mm-hmm. But to wrap up the show here, I do want to get into how the Ducks have done recently and what we can look at some of the highlights and top performers over the last little week. So talk about 10, 15 minutes here, and then we'll wrap her up. But the Ducks just completed that five-game Eastern Canada, but I guess just East Coast road trip. Boston, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, Detroit. Went 3-0-2, so grabbed points in each game, which is nice, 8 out of 10 points. Sit third in the Pacific Division, technically fifth in points percentage because Edmonton and Calgary could catch them, but still in a decent spot. Like, they're keeping pace. They had some good games. They beat Boston, lost to Toronto in the shootout, I think, right? Mm-hmm. And then beat Detroit, beat Ottawa, and beat Montreal. Or am I missing?
No, lost to Detroit in overtime. Right. That's the one Gibby lost it on.
So not a bad stretch. You know, some really good John Gibson performances, some good performances all around. Troy Terry led the way with 5 points in the five games. Sam Steele, 4 points. Not bad. 1 goal, 3 assists over that stretch. Looked pretty good, looked a little bit better. Shattenkirk following it up with 4 and Raquel with 4 as well. And then a handful of guys with 3. And obviously Trevor Zegras having another play of the season with the cleanest Michigan goal I think I've seen. Against the Montreal Canadiens. Yeah. We might as well talk about that first. I just rambled a bit about how the Ducks have been doing, but that goal was,
I've never been so mad to not be watching live. I was like driving home when that happened.
I missed it too.
And all of a sudden I just see my phone and I was just like, what? And then it was like, oh my God, he got his Michigan. And I was like, oh no. And then I watched it and I was just like, oh, that's like incredible. Like, he doesn't slow down at all. He's just like, okay, cool.
Yeah, well, we normally see like a stop behind the net and then, okay, you know, stand still, pull it. Fluid motion skating the whole way, picks it up and just shovels the top corner. Like, that was, he already had goal of the season probably with the flip pass to Milano. That one could still win just because of the creativity, but.
Poor Milano, dude. Just completely lost in the histories. He's like America didn't beat the Soviet Union to win the gold medal. They beat them to go to the gold medal game.
Dude.
That's how I feel about Milano. It's Milano's like, he's like the Finland of that play where it's like, no. He was a huge part of it after the fact.
It's just overshadowed by creativity now.
It's just completely, and I get it. It's so much fun, but it's just, I do feel bad for Sonny Milano, you know, especially as someone who's having this like kind of resurgent year. Coming off of injury, coming off of, playing on a team that he couldn't have been less suited for in Columbus and stuff like that. And I'm very happy for him. But, yeah, I mean, Zegras is the star right
now. It's unreal, too. It's like this is season one, technically, for Trevor Zegras. And to pull off two of those, which, again, are usually in, like, a career highlight package for most players, or not even for most players, for, like, the top-end creative guys like that. That's in a long-term highlight package. He's pulling this off in his first season. Had a couple between-the-legs shots that probably could have scored on, a between-the-legs passes. Like, this, when we look back at this in 5 years, and we put together a highlight package from Trevor Zegras, it's going to probably be one of the most insane 5-year stretch highlight package we've probably ever seen. Like, if this is what he's pulling off now, imagine when he gets better over the next couple of years here and the stuff that he's going to be able to do. Like, it's not like you can just figure it out too. Like, we talk about some players, why they have sophomore slumps. Like, just wait till the league figures out and teams, like, they're not, you can't figure this out. Like, you don't know what he's going to do. He doesn't know what he's going to do on half of these plays until it's a split second decision. He sees the space open up and he's got the balls and the skill to pull it off. This highlight reel in 5 years time is going to look unbelievable. You put together a highlight reel of the plays, not even the finished plays, but the ones he tried to put it between the legs and not. And you add that together this year in a highlight package, and it's already ridiculous. Like, it's just going to get amplified even more by the end of the season. And it's so much fun to watch. And I love watching Red Wings fans just get really butthurt that that he's getting all the attention in the world. Like, what do you expect, man? Like, you and me have a different perspective on it, because like, we really like Raymond. We really like Moritz Seider, and they're great players. Mm-hmm. But how you can't be upset. Like, when you've got a young kid pulling off this type of stuff on a nightly basis, you can't get mad at the league for trying to get behind this guy and maybe bending the rules a little bit in the All-Star game to get him out there. Like, you have to. Like, this guy is putting Anaheim as a franchise on the map, like making them must-see TV when they're not even – they're good this year. They're a better team this year, but they're not like a Tampa Bay. They're not a team like, you know, you're not going to – I'll roll up and watch –
they're not even Nashville.
Yeah, like I'll roll up and watch a Colorado game any night just to see that team play because they're amazing. People are just watching the Ducks just to see Trevor Zegras do some crazy shit. Like, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, and like – I don't know, man. Like – to whatever extent about Detroit, all I'll say is it's like it's felt pretty clear to me all year long that it's been three guys, and everybody has agreed it's been three guys. Do you want to know who should be aggrieved? Is Anton Lundell and Florida Panthers fans. He's playing a difficult role and is a meaningful contributor on a contender right now. I think when you're looking at degree of difficulty, it's him and Moritz Seider at the top. You know, coming in and basically demanding that you be the new number one defenseman, even on a team that's like, oh, it was Danny DeKeyser before. That's still meaningful. That's still really impressive. He's, you know, he's big. He skates well. He's getting goals. He's getting assists. He's playing in a way that you can see his impact. And the same thing with Lucas Raymond. Anybody who watches that kid play for 10 minutes, man, you're like, yeah, he's so special. But Zegras was like made, and I don't want to, I'm going to just really sound like a boomer, but like he was made for the social media era where it's GIFs and short clips and all that kind of stuff. And it's just about sharing these little moments. Like, that's all he needs. And like, that's the thing about him that I think is so cool and so special is, to your point about how, you know, he doesn't know what he's going to do, his spontaneity is one of the biggest parts of his creativity. But the other part of it is he doesn't even make simple plays in simple ways, right? Like, you could always count on Ryan Getzlaf to make a simple play well. And it's just like, that guy's streaking down, nobody else sees it, boom, cross-ice pass, finish. And the vision is remarkable. Trevor Zegras like goes almost out of his way to be like, oh, I'm going to do a triple spin and make them think I'm going to the blue line. And then I'm going to pass it off of my own back, hit it with my elbow, and it's going to land at the feet of Derek Grant, who's just going to touch it into the, you know what I mean? Like, it's insane. His creativity and his spontaneity combine in this really, really wonderful way. And like you said, and every, you know, anybody who watches him play, like, confidence mixed with that spontaneity and mixed with that creativity just creates must-see TV. He's just a blast to watch. I don't know that he's going to win the Calder. I think he will, just more than anything because of he's got those very easily moments,
sticks
right?
In your like, mind, right? It's a popularity contest in some sense at the end of the day when it's going to come down to the wire between when we look at point, unless one of these guys just opens up like a 10 to 15 point gap, it's going to come down to the wire between Raymond, Seider, Zegras, and Lundell. It's going to be fairly close. They're all within a few points of each other right now. If it's close, I imagine Zegras wins it because of those moments, because he did ridiculous plays, things that most people in this league can't pull off, especially at his age, to come in as a rookie and do that. Should he win it because of that? I know a lot of people are going to argue no, but that's the reality of the situation, is when it comes down to voters and opinions, when you're thinking, okay, who deserves the Calder this year? A lot of people are going to pick Zegras because of that, especially if it's close.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's what I was going to say is like, I think when you think about it, like the Heisman, right? Like So the Heisman, Eddie, is this award that they give to college football players who are really good at college football. Football is the sport that we play down here that you guys stole up there, and you play it in a weird way. But, you know, that you can find Heisman moments, right? Like Johnny Manziel scrambling for 45 seconds and then throwing the dumbest pass in the world to Mike Evans. Yeah, dude, that won him the fucking Heisman. Like, you have these moments that stick in your brain and give you an easy recall to the impact that they're having. Because, again, nobody is giving it to Zegras if all he did this year was the pass to Milano. If that's all he did, it's not a conversation. It's everything he's doing combined with how much his style of play stands out, and especially stands out in Anaheim, which has just been the most boring type of hockey imaginable for 10 years. I love it. It's my favorite thing in the world. I'm not knocking it. But they have had a very clear style, and he does not fit that style. And it's remarkable. And so, yeah, like I do and I don't think it's unfair, you know. Lucas Raymond's got, what, 40 games left to pull some dope shit off? I hope he does it. It's awesome. It's fun as hell to watch. I hope Mo Sider goes between his legs and over his head. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I hope everybody does the dopest shit, and we just get to the end, and at the awards, they just play a montage. I don't even care who wins the award. Just play the montage. That'd be so cool. You know, so as far as all that's concerned, it started out with me saying that everyone should feel bad about Anton Lindell, and then I stopped talking about him, which just proves the point.
Wait, before we get to Lindell, I want to make a comment on that with, like, the being creative sticks out in your mind. Like, with Red Wing fans, it's very hypocritical to be getting upset that, oh, Raymond and Sider aren't getting enough attention and this flashy kid's getting attention, when the Ducks for the last decade plus have had guys that just don't get attention for what they deserve, and even Getzlaff and Perry for the way they play. And then the Red Wings had probably the most comparable player to Trevor Zegras now in Pavel Datsyuk, where they got to enjoy him for how many years in Detroit, and to sit there and say, oh man, I can't believe this flashy kid is getting all this attention. Like, look what Datsyuk was a great player, for sure. But was he elevated a little bit in terms of his fame and stature because of what he did to guys on a nightly basis to embarrass them? 100%. So, like, for any fan base to get behind and sob that their two young players aren't getting enough attention because, you know, Mr. Flash over here is you know, making people take notice. Like, come on. You have any fan base, you can't be getting upset. You know, Florida, to some extent, sure. You want to be upset that Lindell is not getting enough attention as these three guys and is sitting right in the same, you know, realm as them of points and putting up five assist nights? There. I can understand that, because Lindell definitely deserves a lot more credit for what he's doing in, like, a third-line role for the Panthers, playing with, like, Mason Marchment. I know he's playing with Sam Reinhart now, but, you know, like, he's been kind of all over the place. Not getting as much freedom in the roster necessarily as guys like Zegras and Raymond and Sider are just getting thrust into top six and starting top pairing defenseman roles.
Yeah, no, he is decidedly low on the pecking order because the team is good. Like, it's good for Lindell that he's in that role, and it's even better for Florida that he's excelling in it. You know, so it's a great, it's just so stupid, man.
I can't wait till somebody wins this award this year. We don't have. Oh well, I guess next year we'll be talking about potentially Mason McTavish being a favorite for the Calder Trophy, probably. So, but yeah, I mean, listen, I hope Zegras wins it. At the end of the day, if he doesn't, I'm not gonna be super upset. I kind of want this debate and argument to be over so we can just enjoy them all as players, and for what they're all doing is impressive.
Coward.
I do, yes, selfishly want Trevor Zegras to win and maybe follow it up with a back-to-back with Mason McTavish next year. But he's going to have some tough competition with Shane Wright probably jumping right into the league, and Owen Power coming in playing for the Sabres and a few other guys. So it'll be a...
Dude, you just gave me flashbacks to the Dodgers when I was a kid. Like, the Dodgers had, like, the first back-to-back Rookie of the Year winners in Piazza and someone else, and I can't remember. I'm sure somebody in the chat. Jimmy's old enough. He'll remember. He probably watched him play Little League. But, you know, and that kind of like, yeah, man, that stuff's cool. And like, you get to see that kind of stuff like build on it. You know what I mean? Like, to the conversations people have had about Shesterkin, how wonderful it is to go to just have this line of goalies. And you're like, oh man, it really sucks that we don't have Henrik. Oh shit, Igor Shesterkin's incredible. You know, to a very different version. You know, it's kind of that Calder race thing where it's like back to back years, you have two guys in the race. It's kind of just cool. It's just like, we have a lot to be excited about moving forward. And you know, it's just a really fun spot to be in. And I think if nothing else, it's really good for the league right now. Like, I firmly believe when Detroit is good, it's good for hockey. They just mean something special. And you know, I'm excited about them being good again. I hate it, you know, because I don't want them to be good because they made, you know, being a Ducks fan miserable for so long. But damn, it's going to be fun. You know, Dylan Larkin's a really likable guy. There's a lot to be excited about as far as young talent in this league. Eventually, Montreal will figure out how to let Cole Caulfield be good again. You know, Nick Suzuki and you know, Sebastian Aho is not really young anymore, but still, like, there's just so much fun talent right now in this league that I can't explain enough how great it is that we are in a position to be legitimately excited about the next 5 years in a way that we haven't been in a really long time.
I was going to look this up, and I think I got it here. I was going to try and find out the only times in NHL history that a team has had back-to-back Calder Trophy winners. It's happened 3 times. Way, way back. We're talking 42, 43, 43, 44, and 44, 45.
Oh, so when everyone was a rookie?
It was the Leafs had Gay Stewart, Gus Bodner, and Frank McCool. When Frank McCool won at 26.
Those are all Brad Lambert people. I guess he was a goaltender.
And then the other one was Boston in 66, 67, 67, 68. Can you guess who one of them was? I think it should be fairly obvious.
So it had to have been Bobby Orr.
That was one. He was 18, won the Calder in 66, 67, and had 41 points. I don't know in how many games, but... And then there was a next year, somebody else won the Calder for them.
Was it Esposito?
Somebody, Derek Sanderson won the Calder after that. Tony Esposito won it 2 years later for, God, I'm trying to think of what this team is. CBH, I don't know. Oh, Blackhawks, wow, I'm stupid. Yeah, so those are the, those were the only 2 times. All right, well, 3 times technically. That there's a Rangers one. That was the other one I was going to refer to. Rangers in...
Had to be like, what, Leech and somebody?
No, it was earlier, and I lost it. Oh, yeah, it's 50s. Gump, Worsley, and Camille Henry won it back-to-back in 52, 53, and again, 53, 54. So not since the 60s.
Not real people.
Has any team had somebody win it back-to-back. So, hey, we could be... Florida came close. Colorado came close. Colorado had Landeskog, and then Huberto broke it up, and then MacKinnon won, and then Ekblad won the year later. So for 4 years there, it was split between Florida
that's and
Colorado. But other than that, yeah, that's really as close as any team has gotten to winning it back-to-back. The last few years since that Florida-Colorado swap, it's been Chicago with Panarin, Toronto with Matthews, Barzal with the Islanders, Pettersson with Vancouver, Makar with Colorado, and Kaprizov last year.
Campers on rocks. He's so dope. We're not doing that today, though. We're not going to turn this into a Minnesota Wild podcast. Nope.
Anything else you want to cover? I mean, we obviously Verbeek was the big news. Talked a bit about how the Ducks have been doing, saving some of the trade deadline stuff. I'm sure for a future show as we get closer to the deadline, some more rumors come out here. But anything you want to mention before we head into the All-Star break here?
Oh man, I you know, speaking of the All-Star game, I'm really looking forward to some of the dumb stuff they want to try this year. You know, I think them embracing the entertainment part of it is going to be good. And like, you know, we had a whole conversation about it and what it does or doesn't mean and why, you know, you really shouldn't get worked up about it until they make it worth it. these are the kinds of things that maybe make it a little bit more worth it, maybe make it a little bit more easy and fun to actually get worked up about. You know, it's going to be cool. They're bringing in outside people. Like, I want to say Philippe Marie Poulin, but that's just because I keep seeing her name on every time The Athletic puts out the women's Olympic primer. But there's like, I think two or three women that are going to be part of the breakaway challenge and the face-off challenge and stuff like that. And it's going to be a blast. I'm really looking forward to it. I really hope the NHL just even for a weekend pulls the stick out of its ass and just lets these guys have fun. And it would be a blast for that to go. Tom Wilson's going to be there now, which means everyone's going to be mad all weekend. I can't wait. It's going to be fun.
I don't want to say Ovi doesn't have COVID, because I would like to believe that the testing is true.
COVID?
But he always finds a way to get out of the All-Star game. When he really doesn't want to go, he finds a way to get out of it. And well, finds a way to get out of it without missing time and getting game suspension. So I hope for his sake he doesn't have COVID, because I would like to see him continue to play as many games as possible and break the record that Gretzky holds right now. But yeah, Ovi, every time you see Ovi's going to miss an All-Star game, there's a little part of you is like, ah, is he really hurt? Does he really have COVID? Yeah. Is his wife really having another kid? Like, is...
Oh, man. Yeah, exactly. I stubbed my toe, guys. I don't think I can make it.
We'll enjoy it. Zegras is in breakaway challenge. Terry's in accuracy challenge. And Gibby is breakaway, right? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he's going to be in the consecutive save streak challenge.
Oh, right, yeah. How much do you like that the breakaway challenge has like four guys that should be there? It's got DeBrinket, Hughes, Kaprizov, Zegras, and then Alex Petrangelo.
Dude,
I hope he shows up and pulls off the best move and wins.
That's so cool. Like that's the kind of stuff. Like, if you would have asked me, Alex Petrangelo doesn't seem like a particularly fun guy, but if he is like secretly an incredibly fun and goofy dude, and he just like shows up and does some dumb stuff, right? Because nobody thinks of him the way that they think of PK Subban, right? Pulling out the Jager hair and all that kind of stuff. I would love for it to, you know, again, like anything that positively brings eyes to the NHL right now is huge, especially since everything bringing eyes to the NHL right now is terrible. So I hope Petrangelo balls out, man. I hope the whole thing goes super well. I think they're starting to take steps towards what we were talking about of having guys in the skills competitions that aren't in the game. Yep. And trying to really make the quality of the skills competition excellent by detaching it from the All-Star game rosters. I think there's plenty of potential there for things they can do. They can do, you know, a rookie sophomore game, all that kind of stuff. Like, there's all sorts of things they can do that to get guys into the All-Star game weekend, into the festivities, onto people's TVs, onto people's awareness and radar in a way that might actually make the All-Star game itself more meaningful, because these guys are there for that and all the other stuff is around it. You know what I mean? Like, some of these guys, right, are going to be in some of these things, and that rocks. But I also think it's cool that some of them aren't, and we're just going to get to keep meeting new people, right? Like, Jason Capono was never an All-Star. He won the three-point competition. You know what I mean? Shannon Brown was never an All-Star. He was in like multiple dunk contests. Like, there's just so much to be excited about right now. And it's all based entirely on me assuming the NHL is making good decisions. And that has never backfired.
Yeah, never once. But all we know is no matter what, I don't like any, who knows if the other guys that are in the game and got invited are going to bring it. Trevor Zegras is going to bring it to that. That's what he's there for. Mm-hmm. And he's already getting a little bit of.
I hope he shows up in a Red Wings jersey.
Oh, my God. That would be amazing. If he takes off like a Ducks jersey and he's got like, I was going to say a Raymond jersey, but I don't think you want to target anybody specifically.
You got to do a Howe jersey.
Just an unnamed Red Wings jersey on the back.
Dude, or just one dumb shit.
It says Michigan 69 on the back. And he just pulls off a Michigan in the shootout. That would be amazing. I have Verbeek jersey. Firebite says classic Pat Verbeek jersey. Love it. You know he's gonna show up and he's gonna bring it because he's been getting. Well, I don't think him personally, but a lot of people have been giving him flack for being invited just to do that event, which is dumb. I mean, like we said, you want to have guys that are gonna make the event exciting, be there no matter what. So, but he's gonna. I think he has to bring it, right? Because he's the only guy that's there, other than the celebrity guests, that is there just to be in that specific competition. So I'm sure he's been. He's been thinking about some different ideas, and I'm excited to watch it because every year you get some guys who will try some stuff, but they're not really into it as much, so they're not going to pull out the stops. You know he's got some pretty interesting stuff in his bag. So,
right, and then you know him having a guy like Jack Hughes.
Yeah, it's a battle, right? There's competition there because he's got
Jack Hughes is a buddy of his. He's a guy. That's you know strategic. What I mean? They have a really great relationship. I love the idea of those two just kind of going back and forth. You know what I mean? That just sounds like fun. Jack Hughes, such a jackass. What a the worst person in the world. No. The worst person in the world.
Like I can okay, Zegras, Drysdale, Dreesdale, fair enough. Jack Hughes.
Well, it's so dude. I was literally thinking about it earlier. How funny it is that it sounds like Jacques. Which I don't speak French. I don't even know what that means. I just know it's a French word, Jacques, and you like say it when you're shocked or some stuff. But just I'm like, oh, that's like funny, and then it just stuck its way into my brain, and now I'm on here, sounding like an asshole.
I love it. All right, well,
thanks for coming out. This was good.
Fun
stuff.
To get on here and talk about some positive stuff. No hockey for a little bit here, but a lot.
Go Clippers! Lakers suck.
Clippers up by 15. Jeez.
Let's go.
Enjoy the All-Star break. Enjoy. I know there's some Rams fans who listen to our podcast. Enjoy the Super Bowl. I'll be cheering for Joe Burrow and the Bengals. But underdog story.
I'm 100% here for Joe Burrow because I am a huge fan of Skyline Chili. Obviously, as someone who has never had it, I believe it is good. And go Bengals.
But, I mean, we'll probably, I would hope we would have a show before the Super Bowl because it's in a couple weeks from now.
Oh, my God, it's 2 weeks away. That's so dumb.
But we'll be back, I would assume, next week. We don't have a ton to talk about, so we'll see how that's going to go because there's going to be no games until the 11th of February against Seattle. And there's another, like, 5-day break there until we play back-to-back against Calgary and Edmonton. So, stay tuned to our social if we're going to be doing a show next weekend. If not, I would imagine it will be some sort of Patreon show to take advantage of the lack of news and the availability of time to put something like that together. We're working on getting the whole band together for our Pucks and Brews. Last time it was just me and Jay who riffed a little bit about the Aaron Dell situation and the Evander Kane trade.
What was his take on that?
I was going to say, you have to go listen to the Patreon episode to find out. But no, to my surprise, was not back in the goaltender. He was not a fan of the Aaron Dell situation.
Coward. Yeah,
I thought traitor. He was going to support his kind, but it didn't happen. So if you want to go listen to that, check out our Patreon. It's a great, not really debate, but discussion that Jay and I had about the Aaron Dell hit on Drake Batherson that injured him for a couple months. And we talked about the Evander Kane trade and a few other things about John Gibson and Vezina Trophy and a bunch of different stuff. So check that out. Steven and I have a couple Patreon ideas that we're going to be coming up with soon. And then obviously, like I said, trying to get the full gang together for Pucks and Brews. It's been a while since we had all four of us together to do one of those. So hopefully soon. We're getting it in the works and just trying to plan it out on a day that works for everybody, but stay tuned for that. Appreciate everybody who came out and stuck around here for the full almost hour 40, and we'll be back soon. So enjoy the All-Star game, guys.
Bye, everybody.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals. Save